Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's concluding program on the common law right after this. The income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. You know, we covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes and practice idolatry by signing contracts with foreign and alien gods called government. And we're not getting away with these crimes either. We're now paying up to 74% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a $7 trillion national debt. We're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. Our social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme, and we live from paycheck to paycheck. And you know what? We're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. It's called Article 1, Section 10. No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send me an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the answer to admiralty. We discovered that the common law has been supplanted and replaced by admiralty. What's the solution to this admiralty problem that we have? And what's the problem to the drug problem that you have? Quit taking the damn drugs. What's wrong with the smoking problem that you have? Quit smoking the cigarettes. Well, that's painful. Yeah, that's right. Withdrawal from cigarettes is painful. Withdrawal from drugs is painful. Withdrawal from the welfare state is painful. I don't deny that. But, you know, it's a choice that you got to make. You can die from cancer, keep smoking. You can die from drugs, keep taking the drugs. You can die and be impoverished by income tax and Social Security. Stick with the program. But don't complain about it. You know, once you sign up for it, don't complain about it. You got a driver's license, don't complain about the highway patrol. You got a marriage license, don't complain about social lady. You got a business license, don't complain about OSHA, the EPA, and the State Tax Commission. You're a member of the Army, you signed the enlistment contract, shut up about the sergeant. Just say yes, sir, and no, sir. Now, if you're dissatisfied, then there's probably three or four of you listening to me right now that are dissatisfied. And there's probably three or four of you out there that can probably kick the smoking habit. You know, I smoked for 9 years, and I kicked the smoking habit. I was a loyal member of the United States income tax system for many years. I'm a loyal member of the Social Security program for many years, and I kicked both of those habits. If I can do it, you can do it. Now, we were talking about the George Rapp Society and List's National Economy. Well, in the Rapp Society, List National Economy was practiced on a small scale. In the Federal Reserve System, List's National Economy is now being practiced on a national scale. In fact, it's being expanded to include the entire world in a new world order, a new Global 2000 program, in regulating and controlling our economy, not just in the United States, but worldwide. And evidently, the people of the world want it. Well, I would presume that they want it. Now, in the Rapp Society, there was no risk to the insurer, that is, George Rapp and his associates. In the Federal Reserve System, there is little or no risk to the maritime lender or the insurance underwriter called the Federal Reserve System. They have nothing at risk. Nothing. In the Rapp Society, labor was pledged, which was the premium for the privilege of remaining in the society for the chance of making a profit. In the Federal Reserve System, labor is pledged to obtain the units of credit called Federal Reserve Notes to pay the interest to the maritime lender or the maritime insurance underwriter, who's one and the same under maritime law. In the Rapp Society, Rapp had no vested interest in the lives of the society members. In the Federal Reserve System, the Federal Reserve has no vested interest in the life of the United States or of the life of its citizens, nor does it have any risk at stake in the maritime venture of the public national credit system. Isn't that just special? But you do. In our country today, we need only to compare the economics to those of a seaman on a voyage aboard a ship. Aboard ship, the ship is the credit commune in a joint maritime venture for the profit beholding to the Class A stockholders and the owners of the ship. In America, by comparison, that's called the Federal Reserve. And the captain of the ship is the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, when we compare the law to the situation aboard ship with those on land today, our comparing common law versus maritime law, here's what we find. Under the common law, the rights of privacy are respected. Aboard the ship, on the credit voyage in the credit commune, there is no privacy, and the privacy has the right at any time to invade your privacy. So that's the IRS. They just come in and invade your privacy and say, hey, listen, produce these records and books. Now, if you don't belong on board the ship, if you don't have a contract, then the IRS doesn't have any right, doesn't have any business looking at your books or papers. Now, I've been out of this for 20 years now or more, 1978 is when I resigned. Do you know I've never had an IRS audit? From the time I entered the business world in 1968 until I left it in 1981, I had three audits by the IRS. In the 20 years since I left in 1981, I have not had a single audit by the IRS. Now, isn't that just special? Now, the common law always deals in substance, that is land, labor, and property. And by substance, we mean with gold and silver coin and with real goods and services, you know, like cows and meat, milk, butter, and eggs. Under maritime law, in the credit commune, we're always dealing with bills, notes, checks, credit cards, and fictitious documents known as stocks and bonds. Okay, well, I used to deal in those. And there's no privacy when you're dealing in bills, notes, checks, credit cards, and credit. There's no privacy at all. So if you want privacy, then you get out of those and you get into dealing with gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Number three, under the common law, the rights of the family are protected. Aboard ship in the credit commune, there is no marriage or family unit. And yes, the captain performs marriages aboard ship for people, people that are traveling aboard the ship. But for all of the practical purposes on board ship, there is no family unit. Both are members of the commune, and they must obey the orders of the head, the captain of that commune. That's why Hillary Clinton, you know, our number one senatorial communist, wrote that book called It Takes a Village to Raise Your Child. It takes Social Lady. It takes the public school system. It takes government to raise your child. That's because you're incompetent and can't do it. Number four, under common law, there are personal rights and property rights which are protected by the law of the land. Aboard ship, that is in the commune, the USA Incorporated, there are no personal or property rights. None. Members are allowed to keep toilet articles and anything else that the captain allows, but if one has anything that may or could be a danger to the voyage, you know, like private property, it's not allowed. And if it's found, it's then destroyed or taken away from him. For instance, the captain may feel that your wooden footlocker is a fire hazard, and therefore it's a danger to the ship, and the decision may be made to throw the footlocker overboard. Or if you had property in one of the holds of the ship that presented some danger to the rest of the ship because it caused a damage in the hold, or if there was a fire in the hold where your property is, the captain could shut that hold off and all of your goods could be destroyed. Number 5. Under the common law, each person is individually responsible for his own actions. Aboard ship, under maritime law, there is limited liability for the payment of debts. Looking further at limited liability, it's easy to recognize that our common law has been corrupted by admiralty and maritime law. Criminals have murdered and raped innocent people, and 8, 10, or 12 years later, they're released from prison to become a probable danger to society again. We see this all the time with pedophiles. Some guy goes out here, and he's a sex offender. And he kidnaps some little child and takes her out and rapes her and kills her. And then they lock him up for a while and give him a little psychological evaluation. And then they turn him loose out on the streets again, and he's a sexual predator. And so now what they tell you is, well, we'll give you notice. We'll tell you that a sexual predator has moved in next door. You know, it's like telling you, well, gee, we're going to let you know that you've got piranhas in your goldfish pond. The hell do you want a piranha in your goldfish pond for? Why would you even want one there, much less be notified that, hey, you got piranhas in your goldfish? My God, folks, I tell you, we've taken leave of our senses here in this country. A man who murdered a supervisor and mayor of San Francisco, this is back in the 1970s now, was released from jail in 7 years because of limited liability for payment of debt. Guy was named Harvey Milk, I believe that was his name, and he went in and killed George Moscone, who was the mayor. He just walked in, bang, 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 shot this guy. And then, you know, he went to jail for 7 years, and they released him. You know, anyone can pull a trigger and wound the president of the United States and then say, well, you know, I was insane at the moment that I did it. That's what happened with this guy that shot President Reagan. Remember that? And other than being sent to a mental institution, served no time at all in jail. Now, under common law, these people would have been executed. They'd have been taken out and stoned. The Mosaic law just, we know how to take care of people like that. How soon it was forgotten that John Wilkes Booth didn't even get a trial for allegedly shooting President Lincoln. You know, under the common law, it's cold, heartless, and brutal. Under the common law, we have the right to refuse an order as a free sovereign. Aboard the ship, the captain can force every seaman to specifically perform to do his duty as the captain sees fit. Under the common law, and just to give you an illustration of this number 6, again, over in Iraq, you soldiers over there have been extended. Your duty has been extended. You say, well, I signed this contract, and now my contract is up, and they don't let me go home. They extend it for 3 or 6 months over here. Well, hell, join the club. It's always been that way. That's what admiralty jurisdiction's all about. You don't have rights. And so the captain just comes along and says, well, we're going to extend your contract for a while longer. There's an emergency here. He can do that. There's an emergency here. We lost an engine on the airplane. We want you to throw your luggage overboard. Number 7. Under the common law, the jury not only determines the admissibility of evidence and judges the facts, but its first and foremost duty is to judge the justice of the law as it applies to the particular case. I don't know how many people have sent me letters and talked about this jury system and so on. Yeah, we used to have a jury system in America. We used to have the petite jury. We used to have the jury that judged the law and the facts. And it still does. In a common law circumstance, it still would, still could, and still should. Unfortunately, we don't have any common law citizens. These people that call me and complain about the juries, they've all got social security numbers and marriage licenses and birth certificates and business licenses. And my God, you know, these people are wrapped up in the civil law system right up to their eyeballs, complaining about the civil law system and lamenting the fact that we've lost our common law. I agree. I lament the system. I lament the fact that we've lost our common law. But hey, boys and girls, you can redeem it. You can reclaim it anytime you want. You don't have to be a drug addict forever. The government wants you to stay on this drug called Social Security, income tax, social contract. You know, the what do they call this? Security blanket. They want you to stay with it. The longer you stay with it, the more jobs it produces for your servants, the government bureaucrats. It's good business for them. I don't blame them a bit. If I was a government bureaucrat, I'd be over here spouting off the party line. Hey, you people are incompetent and can't take care of yourself. You need more Social Security. You need more government benefits. Here, let me help you. I'm from the government. I'm here to help you. That's what I'd be doing if I was with Ranger Rick. Now, it is this feature of the common law jury that caused our founding fathers to refer to the common law jury as the palladium, the very foundation or cornerstone of liberty. It's because the jury can nullify these bad laws. Well, now you've got Congress enacting bad laws and you've lost your jury system because all you people have joined the army. And in the army, you're not entitled to a jury. All right, now aboard the ship, the captain, we also call him a chancellor, does not even have to allow a jury. But if he chooses to have a jury, it's merely advisory, and those jurors hear only the facts and evidence permitted by the captain. He determines what they're going to hear and what they're not going to hear. And they must take the law as the captain, the chancellor, dictates it to them. Now, have your public officials now just about totally done away with your jury system? Well, in the admiralty courts they have, but then it's always been that way. What they've done is they got you to move over into seaman's status with seaman's papers in the admiralty jurisdiction, which has always been that way. And now you, who did have or would have or are entitled to common law rights and protections, no longer have them available because you've checked into the mental hospital. I mean, come on, guys. You got to get your discharge before you can claim rights. Now, our Constitution is still the same document that it was in 1787, and all your rights, privileges, and immunities are still there. So you have to go out and claim them, but you got to have the status to claim them. You have to be a common law free man. You can't be a mental patient in the hospital claiming that you've got rights. That's preposterous. Number 8, under the common law, there's no such thing as a victimless crime. And when there is a victim, that victim receives redress, and the victim receives compensation for damages, with no penalty being paid to the state. I'll tell you a little story here. One time I was a youngster, you know, I probably, I don't know, 25, 30 years old. I had a 1956 Chevrolet automobile. And I parked it in Oakland, California, down at Lake Merritt. And I went into this meeting. It was on a Saturday afternoon, and I was in this meeting, and I came out, and I said, well, gosh, I thought I parked my car right here. So I walked up and down the street, and I said, well, gosh, you know, my car doesn't seem to be here, and I know I parked it right here, you know, across from the Veterans Memorial Building down there on Lake Merritt, down by the Kaiser Building. And so I called the police. I said, you know, I think my car's been stolen. So the policeman came down, took a report, and he said, well, did you leave the keys in your car? And I said, well, of course I left the keys in my car. So he gave me a ticket for leaving the keys in my car and making a good kid go bad. Well, come to find out, it was a couple of teenage kids, you know, went joyriding in my car. So they punished me. I'm the victim. My car's been stolen. Now, under the common law, we all leave our keys in our cars, and we hope that some guy will come along and steal our car, because then we get 2 for it, or we get 5 for it. Victims gets compensated. Not under the civil law. The victim gets penalized. You see, under your civil law system, somebody steals your car, and if they catch him and arrest him and jail him for 5 years, you have to pay for this guy's board and room, plus the cost of prosecution, plus the cost of incarceration, etc. You have to pay that in addition to the loss of your car, which you didn't get back, by the way. That's what insurance buys you. Doesn't seem like a very good deal to me, but you know, Americans have decided that they prefer limited liability to strict liability. They prefer the civil law to the common law. And I'm sitting here shaking my head saying, I can't for the life of me understand why you people would want that. But, you know, here's where we are. This is 2005, boys and girls. I didn't make this up. I'm just reporting the facts to you. Aboard ship, the captain can make any act or omission of an act a crime, and he can impose his sanctions, his penalties accordingly. And the only issue to be litigated is whether or not the act was committed, not whether or not you were a person required to do the act. The captain's concern is for the safety of the voyage. Safety of the voyage. And the captain has no time nor desire to see that the victim of a common law crime receives compensation from the perpetrator. So if you wonder why there's no justice in America, there's no justice because it doesn't have anything to do with the maritime adventure. Congress enacts laws that have nothing to do with your property or your property rights. Congress is enacting laws to make money in trade, commerce, business, and industry under the Commerce Clause. All laws that Congress puts out deal with commerce. They deal with traffic. They deal with money. They deal with profit, not with property. That's why there's no justice in America. It's because of the system of law that you've adopted. And it's not something strange or new. It's always been this way. Hell, these judges are talking, you know, about the DeLovio versus Boyd and the Schooner James. Hell, those are clear back in Chief Justice Marshall's day back in the 1820s and 30s. And they warned us. They said, hey, listen, you know, we got a problem here. This admiralty is competing here with the common law. J. Reuben Clark told you there's this endless animosity between the civil and the common law. There's this endless animosity between the Ten Commandments and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. They are at exact opposite loggerheads with one another. Now, if that's, you know, the circumstance and you want to keep your common law, then you got to practice it. You got to perform on it. If you don't and you don't care about it, well, then just sit back and relax. Ride the back of the bus. Shut up. Enjoy the ride. Everything will be fine. People join the army and they live their lives just like Colin Powell. You know, sit back and enjoy the ride. Shut up. Do what you're told. Get up when you're told. Go to bed when you're told. Do what you're told in between. Everything's going to be fine. If you can live your life like that, more power to you. I wasn't cut out of that mold. I couldn't handle it. The Army is no place for George Gordon, I can tell you that right now. I'd never make it in the Army. The first objective in the Army, the first requisite is that you stop thinking. Shut your brain off. My brain's pretty active. It keeps working all the time. Number 9, under the common law, there is little need for jails. Aboard ship, particularly when there is discontent among the crew regarding rules, regulations, and policies, codes and statutes of the captain, there is a continual need to construct more and more jails, more and more brigs, and to enlarge the penal enforcement staff. That's what we call the law enforcement growth industry. America has more people locked up in our jails today than we have farmers producing our food. Can you believe that? More people locked up. America has more people locked up per capita than any other nation in the world, including communist China and the Soviet Union, or the old Russian Soviet Union. I mean, you talk about police state. The number one police state in the world was South Africa. They had more people locked up than China. We've displaced South Africa now. I don't know why you want a police state, but evidently Americans want a police state. That's what you got. It's what you bought and paid for. It's what you signed up for. Now, remember that Justice Story said in DeLovio versus Boyd about appeals and writs of error. Well, a writ of error is a common law action, while an appeal is the appropriate action from the civil law jurisdiction of equity and admiralty. And you people go into court and you file appeals. Because of the early customs and traditions of the perils of the sea, a very harsh group of laws grew up. Because of the danger from pirates and storms when shipping substantive money, gold and silver, merchants substituted bills, notes, and credits. This evolved into the evil practice of issuing bills, notes, and credits when there was insufficient substance to back them up. Such practices are nothing more than fractional reserve banking and fractional reserve policies. This fractional reserve banking procedure, along with the issuance of non-substance-backed legal tender, is the basis for the inflation that defrauds the American public today. And if you were to ask people today, do you prefer paper money or gold coin? They will tell you at least 99 to 1 they want paper money. I know, because I deal in gold coin. And every merchant that I do business with, at least the first time I do business, I always ask him, do you want to be paid in gold, or do you want to be discharged in paper? And they look at you with a blank stare like, my God, you must be stupid. I want to be paid in real money. Give me United States notes or United States Federal Reserve notes or something that's real. They haven't got a clue as to what gold coin is. The United States Mint is stamping out gold coins every day in $50, $25, $10, and $5 denominations. And they're stamping out silver dollars every day. 95% of Americans never heard of it. Wouldn't know what to do with it if you handed them one. And, boys and girls, trust me, it is not my duty to protect every fool from his folly, and it's not my mission in life to convince you that you should give up paper for gold. I don't give a rat's rectum with what you do. But I think you do have, that I do have an obligation to inform you. You know, I mean, after all, as an educator, I come along and say, well, I ought to tell these people, you know, that there's an alternative. That, you know, you've only received one half of the information. Nobody ever told you that you don't have to join the army. That's not part of the program. You don't have to join Social Security. You don't have to volunteer for the income tax. You don't have to have a business license. Now, you have to have a business license to conduct public business. You don't have to have a business license to conduct private business. You don't have to pay the income tax unless, of course, you have income. There's no law that requires you to have income. I think income is about as profitable and about as detrimental to me. I'm trying to use a split metaphor here. Let me back up. Income tax is not profitable. And since it's not profitable, I think I'm going to avoid it, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I think property has got more profit in it, so I'm going to deal in property. Well, property's never been assessed or taxed in the United States. Did you know that? Property is immune from taxation. And they'll write me an email and say, oh my God, you're out of touch with reality. You got to pay property tax on your property. Property? That's not property, that's land. Land. There's no land tax here in the United States. It's a property tax. A property tax isn't a tax on your property. It's a tax on the value of your property. It's an ad valorem tax that's been misnamed a property tax, like the word gay has been misnamed to describe a sodomite. I mean, we Americans are so damn dumb we can't even speak the language anymore. We're so out of touch with reality, we use words that don't even have any relevance to the real meaning of what it is we're trying to convey. People talk to me and say, hey, like man, you know, like man, like you know. Hell, man, if I knew, I wouldn't be asking you. Do you know the answer to this? Well, like man, like you know. God, my God, we can't even speak English. Now remember what Justice Story said in DeLovio versus Boyd about appeals and writs of error. We are enmeshed in this admiralty. We love it. We want it. We desire it. I'm simply coming on the air to tell you there's an alternative to it. Now, of course, the alternative, as one evolutionist said, is it's unthinkable. I forgot this guy's name now, but he said, you know, there's only two solutions to this. It's either special creation or evolution. And the reason I believe in evolution is because the alternative is unacceptable. The alternative would be God and special creation. You got the same problem here. Same problem, boys and girls. You got a choice here to make between the civil law and the common law. A choice that you make between the banks and the law of the merchants and equitable notes and bills and property and property rights. A choice between the Ten Commandments and the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto. I mean, it's laid out here in spades. And, you know, J. Reuben Clark and various members of the Supreme Court and various presidents and politicians have told us that. It's here in the literature. What I'm reading to you, I took right out of the Supreme Court reports. I'm not making all this up, you know. I'm not smart enough to make all this up. You know, these citations that I'm reading to you, I'm not, you know, I'm just Georgie Gordon. Hell, I went to public school. I'm not as smart as President Bush, and he's as dumb as a box of rocks. But I'm not brain dead. Not yet. I'm not brain dead. I learned to count when I was 37. And I would submit to you that you can probably learn how to count, too. I think that's what I'll put on next week. I'll put on Social Security. I'll show you how to count. God, you people will be absolutely dumbfounded. You'll be amazed when you learn how to count. Fractional reserve banking and non-substantive tender cannot exist at the common law. They can only exist under the admiralty or maritime law. You can't have unjust weights and balances. God Almighty prohibits it. He says, don't you have paper money, stocks and bonds, mortgages? Don't you practice usury and interest? Of course, we Americans over here, we said, wait a minute, this God's got his head up his wrong end over here. We got to have stocks and bonds and real estate brokers and all of this in order for us to practice trade, commerce, business, and industry. And you do, no doubt about it. God told you, no, that's a mistake. You don't want to do that. We came along and said, now, God, you don't know what you're talking about. It's really kind of a contest between the creator of the universe that says, hey, I've been around for eternity. You know, I'm 35 million years old, and I'm smarter than you punk-ass, pimply-faced punks. I've been around longer, and I know more than you do. And, you know, we come along and say, wait a minute, God, you know, I'm 37 years old, and I may not know how to count, but I'm smarter than you, and we're going to fix all these mistakes that you made in the Bible. We've been busy getting after that for the last 100 years. Busy fixing all of God's mistakes. Hey, listen, I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you can't find Isabella on the map, that's not surprising. And that's because it is not on any map that I know of. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. That's why it's private, not public. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website, and we'll tell you more about it. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and we bring you timely reports on such things as law. That's what we're talking about this week. Science, education, politics, religion, news, current events. And we do that 7 days a week. Don't forget that the Law School offers a free introductory 4-hour CD introductory package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct. It's 417-273-4967. Once more, take the other end of your pencil there and write down 417-273-4967. Little caveat here coming up. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct 417-273-4967. And we're talking about the common law this week. As a law school instructor, I get a lot of questions, of course, that come in over the email machine. People ask questions about the common law and about the UCC and the straw man and all of this Mickey Mouse garbage that comes in. Some of it's got some merit, some of it's got no merit at all. Some of it's just plain stupid. Some of it doesn't even make common sense. And, of course, people don't know that. They're not trained in law. They go to public educational institutions. They don't learn law. They go to law school and don't learn anything about the common law. I mentioned that to my mentor. His name is Ben Rice, an old country lawyer that Jerry Spence said, the best lawyers in America are tucked away in these little towns, and I found one of them. Spence was right. Old Ben, Mormon lawyer, tucked away in this little town called Cuna, Idaho. I think Cuna is on a map, K-U-N-A. You'll have a hard time finding it. It's not too far from Boise. Just look around Boise there. You'll find a little ways west of Boise. Isabella, Missouri. We got a post office here. The zip code 65676, but you won't find it on a map. I don't know how many people live there, 5 or 10 or something like that, but we got a post office here. So when I say this is the Gordon Law School out in Isabella, Missouri, why, you're going to have to know where you're going if you want to get here. Now, going on here, remember item 9 here, under the common law, there's little need for jails. Little need for jails. Do you know that under the law of Moses, they don't have any jails at all? None. None. You get 28 penalties that you apply to people for various breaches of law, various crimes. Not a one of them puts anybody in jail. There's not a single prison ever constructed in Anglo-Saxon administration. That comes from the civil law. That comes from admiralty and maritime. That doesn't come from God or the Ten Commandments or any laws that God ever gave. And that's because locking a guy up in jail costs money. You got to feed, clothe, and house that sucker while he's in there. God bores a hole through their ears and puts them to work out here doing something constructive and intelligent to pay for the damages that they cause. You cause me a damage, pay for it. And if you haven't got any money to pay for it, you pay for it with your labor. We don't do that under the maritime system. Hell, that's counterproductive. We're over here fleecing the property owners. So if you're a property owner and you're complaining about paying the taxes, well, you ought to. You ought to be thinking about, hey, I think I'll drop out of this. See, I was one of Tricky Dick's silent majority. I belonged to the National Association of Manufacturers, voted the straight Republican ticket, employed 30 people, paid about $200,000 a year in taxes. I mean, that's about as American as apple pie, ain't it? And so when I was doing this, I kept waking up every day, and I had all these government bureaucrats coming in here. It was bad enough they were coming in here raping, robbing, and pillaging me, but what was worse was they'd get right in the middle of the road, and they wouldn't let me get by. They not only don't produce anything, they get in the way of the producers who are producing. I mean, hell, it was bad enough I had to pay the fine, then they get in the way so I can't make the money to pay the damn fine. I mean, these bureaucrats don't make sense. But then, that's the role of bureaucracy. It's here to cause inefficiency in the production machine. Ultimately, it destroys the production machine, and then we have to start over. Remember what Justice Story said in the Delovio case about appeals and writs of error? Remember, a writ of error is a common law action? While an appeal is the appropriate action from the civil law jurisdiction of equity and admiralty, you want to know what kind of a court you're in? Just take a look at what kind of an appeal you're going to write. People come in here to law school, they get a little bit confused, and they talk about their rights and common law rights, and then they talk about the UCC, and I sit here and say, that's like talking about a virgin whore. It's an oxymoron. And they don't know any different, because, they don't have any legal background, they don't have any legal training. And by the way, it doesn't take very much to get legal training. Let me describe this. There are 15 basic professions. In 1914, Bouvier listed all 15 of them, of which a lawyer is one. And a lawyer, that is to learn the practice of law, is the least of the 15 professions. I mean, it's the easiest to learn, medicine being the hardest. On a scale of 1 to 15, medicine would be at the top and law at the bottom. The reason lawyers speak in Latin They speak in Latin, so you can't understand what the hell they're talking about. I mean, if these guys ever opened their mouths, you know, I just came over the air and said, well, let me explain this law to you. Is there anything here that you can't grasp, can't understand? You know, you might miss a point or two as we're progressing along here, but, you know, all you got to do is just ask the question again. Say, hey, wait a minute, Gordon, explain that to me. And I'll just open the book and say, well, here's what the Supreme Court said about that. Hey, you know, here's what the Congress said, and here's the statute that said it. Hey, here's what your Constitution says. Can you read that? Means what it says. Here's what the Bill of Rights says. Can you read that? Here's what the Ten Commandments say. Can you read that? So you've been going to church, and a lot of you people go to church, and you get confused. And that's understandable. Preachers are very confusing people. They hold up the Bible, which contains the Ten Commandments, and tell you that you shouldn't practice that. You know, they open the Bible and they quote directly right out of Galatians and Ephesians and then tell you that we can't read Deuteronomy and Numbers. That's bad for us. Yeah, I can understand why religion is kind of confusing. Preachers are kind of confusing. Lawyers are right kissing cousins to them. If you want to take a look at that, take a look at Luke chapter 11, starting verse 37 through 54. If you got a pencil out there, just write that down. Luke 11, 37 through 54. God talks about lawyers and preachers in the same breath. Same breath. He said, they're scum, they ain't worth talking about. And he'll explain that to you in better prose than I can. Now, because of the early customs and traditions of the perils of the sea, a very harsh group of laws grew up. And because of the danger from pirates and storms when shipping substantive money, that is gold and silver. That's why we get the Hanseatic League into the play. Where does bills and notes and where does insurance policies and contracts come from? Where does all of that originate? It originates with maritime equity. Maritime admiralty. And there's good reason for it. No doubt about it. There's good reason. And so the merchants, you know, you'd ship goods. You know, let's load a hula hoops onto a ship, and let's load the gold and silver onto the ship, and the ship sinks. You lose the hula hoops, you lose the property, and you lose the gold and silver. So one day, the merchants woke up and said, you know, this is kind of hazardous. So here's what we ought to do. We ought to put the gold over here in a vault someplace called a bank. And then we'll ship the hula hoops, and we'll just write out a piece of paper called a bill. When the hula hoops are delivered, the guy signs the bill and sends it back, and then we will move the gold from one box to another box. We do that on 42nd Street in New York to this day. A load of oil leaves Saudi Arabia and goes to Brazil. The oil gets down to Brazil, they just sign a piece of paper. Today you can do it by electronic transfer, and they just send a note, and it just says, well, transfer some Brazilian gold from the Brazilian box into the Saudi Arabian box. Okay, so a ship leaves Brazil with a load of bananas, and it goes over to Saudi Arabia. And so they just send a wire transfer, sign the bill, and it just says, well, take some gold out of the Saudi Arabia box and put it back into the Brazilian box. This is called your balance of payments trade. See how simple that is? Makes all the sense in the world. That way the gold doesn't have to be on board ships where, you know, they can sink and then you lose it. Like on the Titanic, you know. All the gold that was on the Titanic sank to the bottom of the ocean. It's been lost. Can't get it back. We don't want that, do we? Bad enough that we lost the ship. Bad enough that people got killed. We certainly don't want to lose the gold. All right, so we had the merchants of the Hanseatic League, and so these guys all got together over in Hamburg, Germany, in 1536, and they hammered out this little proposal in modern times. This is where it comes from, modern times. And so we have a process. It's just called maritime underwriting. Let me describe this maritime underwriting. Let's suppose we got a ship leaving Saudi Arabia. And it's going to ship with a load of oil, and it's going to go up to England. We'll call it the Torrey Canyon. And it's got $100 million worth of ship and oil and possible liabilities on it. And the one insurer takes a look at this and says, well, we're going to charge you a $10 million premium. Only one ship in 100 ever sinks, but, you know, we're going to charge you a $10 premium. They should only charge $1 million. if it was a non-profit operation. But, you know, Lloyd's of London's in business to make money, so they charge you $10 million. Sure enough, the Torrey Canyon hits a rock and sinks, causes $100 million in damages. Well, one insurance company would take a hell of a hit at $100 million, so they divide that up, and these are called surety underwriters. Now, God had something to say about surety in the Bible, and he said, well, don't practice surety. That surety is really bad stuff. Just look up the word surety, S-U-R-E-T-Y, I believe it is. I believe there's an E in there. Surety. And you'll find that God, in the book of Proverbs, six times tells you, you know, if you find yourself signed on in surety over here, you wanna go out here and release yourself as soon as possible. You know, go to this guy and plead with him. Get you off the hook. So I'll give you a little quiz here. Let's suppose that I'm Lloyd's of London, and I'm going to insure the Torrey Canyon, and I say, well, I've got the whole $10 million premium here, but I'm not sure I want the whole risk. So I call you, and I say, Bob's Insurance, would you like to take 10% of this $10 million premium? And you say, yeah, I'll take 10% of the risk, $10 million for $1 million. So I send you a check for $1 million, and you're pretty happy. And I do this to nine other guys. And so nine of you guys, nine now, have a 1/10 ownership, and I got 1/10 ownership in this contract, maritime contract. The ship sinks. Now, I'm Lloyd's of London, and I declare bankruptcy, and I say, well, I can't pay my $10 million share. And eight of the other insurance underwriters, they say, well, we can't pay our $10 million share either. But you, Bob, you've got $100 million in the bank. How much of that $100 million loss do you own since you got $1 million as an underwriter? You ever do an exercise like this? Well, you become the proud owner of the whole $100 million loss. Yeah, you got $1 million worth of premiums, you got a 1/10 interest in the contract, and you get to pay the whole contract off. That's the way the national debt works. See, the national debt is owed by 280 million Americans. They're the surety underwriters of the national debt. George Bush is out here spending your money like a drunken sailor in port. That's for the good of the national economy. He's protecting you, of course, from terrorists. Now, let's suppose that America goes upside down and 279,999,999 other Americans can't pay the debt. Do you know where they're going to go for this whole $7 or $8 trillion? They're going to go to you, Bob. And this is called joint and several liability. Did you know that what that meant, joint and several liability? That's why I kind of dropped out of the program. You know, I woke up one day and I said, you know, this citizenship ain't the greatest thing in the world. And on top of that, this surety underwriting isn't the greatest thing in the world. And I think the First Amendment has probably got a better program for us than the Ten Commandments. And maybe just getting out of this surety over here might be a better program. Maybe I ought to get off my bank accounts. And I don't want you people to think that I don't know how to open a bank account, get a driver's license, or write a check. No, I'm pretty experienced. I was a criminal for many years. I mean, I belonged to the syndicate. I belonged to the USA Incorporated for many, many years. I am a trained professional criminal. And then one day, I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, maybe that's not the best thing for me to be, so maybe I ought to get out of that. And so I did, and it's worked out well for me, and I keep telling other people about it. And they say, you know, and when I was in the corporate world, it didn't work out well for me, and now I'm in the private world, it works out a lot better. Sometimes people ask me, well, tell us a little more about that. And so I did, and I got on the radio, and I said, well, let me tell you a little bit more. And I get more and more people, they call and say, well, listen, maybe the Ten Commandments aren't near as bad as I thought they were. Maybe thou shalt not steal. It always makes a lot of sense. And that was my conclusion. I thought thou shalt not steal makes a lot of sense and makes a lot of profit, too, a lot of money. It makes a lot of increase rather than profit. Fractional reserve banking, a non-substantive tender, cannot exist at the common law. They can only exist under admiralty and maritime law. Yeah, under the common law, we can't have maritime underwriting contracts. We can't have surety. It's prohibited. Now, in place, we have strict liability. The shipping company has to pay that damage. They have to assume the whole $100 million liability. Now, this is where an old principle of business comes in. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. So you shouldn't be running these great big supertankers around if you can't pay the damages that these great big supertankers cause. You know, put another way, you shouldn't be driving one of these great big 18-wheelers if you can't cover the damages that this great big 18-wheeler can cause. Maybe you should be driving a motor scooter or riding a bicycle, or maybe you should be riding a horse. You know, my old daddy was a pretty wise old boy, and I got to be 16, you know, and a kid gets to be 16, he's got to have a driver's license. And I told my daddy, I said, I got to have a driver's license. I'm 16. Now, what in the hell, a 16-year-old pimply-faced punk-ass kid needs with a driver's license is beyond me, but I had to have one. My daddy said, well, if you got to have one, son, you ought to go out and get one right away. And I said, well, gee, Dad, once I get a driver's license, I got to have a car. And he said, you know, guy with a driver's license surely ought to have an automobile. And you better get out there and get yourself a car, and you better get one right away. And I said, well, Dad, I might need a little help to get the license and the car. And he said, yeah, but you ain't getting it from me. He said, you got to be responsible. He said, I don't want to be responsible for the acts of an irresponsible 16-year-old pimply-faced punk kid. You're going to go out and buy your own insurance. You're going to go out and buy your own car. You're going to go down and get your own license. Don't count on me. That's the way my daddy was. I did all of the above, and I was just as irresponsible at age 16 as any other 16-year-old kid is. But I had to pay for it myself. And I did. I had the money, and I was working, and I went out, and I bought all the goods and all the services that I needed to accomplish that goal. Then the insurance company said, hey, wait a minute, Gordon. Hey, you 16-year-old kid. We've got to charge you more money because you're irresponsible. Now I had to pay those higher premiums. You see, my dad would not accept surety underwriting on his own kid. He knew just about what a 16-year-old was going to do with that car. And he said, I'm not going to be your surety underwriter. Now, Americans are the surety underwriters of the banking system and all of the derivatives that are out there. $44 trillion worth nationwide. You know, American taxpayers are the surety underwriters of the Social Security program and the national debt. Are you people really confident that you've got the capacity and the funds to pay all of those debts? Have you really got that kind of money? Well, I don't think I can afford that. So I only take on projects that I can afford. You never want to risk more than you can afford to lose. That's just a business principle that's just as rock solid and just as common sense as it can be. Just because you got $100,000 in the bank doesn't mean you want to risk $100,000. You know, just because I might have a couple of bucks doesn't mean I want to risk them. So I'm going to risk no more than I can afford to lose. You know, if everybody did that, we'd have a lot smaller ships running around on the oceans causing a whole lot less pollution. And everybody that caused pollution and caused damages would be paying 100 cents on the dollar out of their own pockets. And you can damn well bet that they'd be a whole lot more careful drivers. Now, I remember when I had insurance, I told you this story the other day. I said, you know, I don't think I can cause $500,000 damage in 16 blocks driving drunk. And I was right on both counts. I was irresponsible, number one. And number two, I could drive 16 blocks without causing any damage. Number two, today I don't have any insurance and I don't drive 16 blocks drunk. If I was drunk, I'd call a cab. It's because I got to be responsible. Well, let me tell you, when you're responsible for your actions, it changes your behavior considerably. When an insurance company is responsible for your actions, it changes your perspective on life considerably. Let me assure you. So fractional reserve banking and non-substantive tender cannot exist at the common law. They can only exist under admiralty and maritime. And when the credit commune is entered, the individual forfeits payment of debts and substitutes a mere discharge of the obligation in its place. The individual lost access to his common law rights and was handed a bowl of pottage. Privileges. In fact, the individual transferred his status from one of a sovereign citizen with free allodial title to all of his possessions to that of a subtenant, a serf, and or slave working the captain's, that is the government's land, subject to the will of the captain. You know, it's amazing that people still believe that they own land, that they have rights, that they can go into traffic court not knowing that they're under maritime law, that they can have a common law jury of 12, and that they can have a jury trial for infractions. People believe that. They don't seem to understand that in this country all juries are merely advisory and take their law as the judge gives it to them and can only see and hear the evidence allowed by the chancellor, not understanding the proper jurisdiction. People have continuously taken common law issues into courts of admiralty and wondered why their substantive constitutional rights were not upheld and respected by the courts. They don't seem to understand that an admiralty court has no jurisdiction to rule on such issues or grant such relief, regardless of how righteous their issues nor sound their facts at law. In conclusion, you should understand that the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution are ordinances within the law of nations, and that the primary and compelling reason for the Declaration of Independence was to eliminate admiralty law and its jurisdiction from the domestic law of the colonies. That the Judiciary Act of 1789 clearly recognized the distinct and separate jurisdiction of admiralty and domestic law. That the Federal Reserve Scheme is identical to its essential features to that of the George Rapp Harmony Society and the Tontine Insurance Schemes, which were pure wagering policies that were investigated and outlawed by several of the states in the early 1900s. And that the Federal Reserve is a maritime lender and an insurance underwriter to the United States, and as such, it has no risk in the maritime venture, or as an insurer has no vested interest in the subject matter being insured. And that the subject matter insured by the Federal Reserve is the public national credit system, which is a maritime venture for profit under limited liability for the payment of debt, and that you're the surety underwriter for all of it. And that for the privilege of limited liability for payment of debt, anyone who benefits from the public national credit provided by the Federal Reserve has an insurable interest in a maritime voyage and is therefore subject to and required to make premium payments under the law of admiralty and maritime as long as the contract is in force. We call that the income tax. And number 8, that all of the resources of the United States have been hypothecated. They have been pledged to the Federal Reserve as security for the public national credit system. And that House Joint Resolution 192, passed by Congress on June 5, 1933, makes it impossible for anyone to pay a debt at law. And this fact makes everyone who benefits from the public national credit system a sole merchant subject to admiralty jurisdiction in all controversies involving said credit. And that because the House Joint Resolution 192, we have lost access to our substantive common law and our allodial land titles, which has resulted in the imposing of an alien and foreign jurisdiction of admiralty upon all of us, rather than our domestic law, just as occurred 200 years ago to our forefathers. That's the bottom line. And that's the end of the story. Which is just exactly on time, because we're out of time. And so at this juncture, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Don't forget, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. Time's up. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.